Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 2nd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. No panel this week for Commodity Week, just a simple, straightforward discussion with one of our favorite guests, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. You can hear the whole of the program online, always, anytime you'd like, on demand, by the way, at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll also find all of our agricultural programming, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. In a moment, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
First, John, when we give you a call, the producers here are always interested to see what you decided and whether you've actually been able to plant. Most years that is the case. I'm really eager to know whether you've been able to roll in the Memphis area this year yet or not.
Well, it's been extremely wet. We started planting Monday. We luckily missed some of the rains. We've had scattered showers around Sunday night, some of them as much as an inch and some of them as little as a tenth of an inch. So we were lucky and started Monday, and we planted maybe 300-400 acres of corn and started Milo.
And what's your mix of acreage this year? Any different than in previous years? And when did you make the decisions?
Oh, months ago. I'm just hoping I can get it all planted. Basically, raised my corn acreage from 1,100 to 1,500, raised my milo acreage from 800 to 1,000, cut my wheat acreage from 1,100 to 400, and cut back bean acreage, the lowest we've planted in years. But I'm apprehensive whether or not we'll be able to get all the milo and corn planted in time. If not, we may have to go over soybeans and or milo.
In your area near Memphis, what would be late in terms of planting for corn and milo? When would you have to make a decision to switch to soybean or some other crop?
Well, I'd say May 1st, you'd pretty much have to go somewhere else. Now, milo, you can plant very late because some people even try to double crop milo with wheat. The milo basis is enormous, 85 over December futures. So I would think people will stick with milo as long as they can. And soybeans will be the fallback, and we're probably going to plant. I would guess that field work's so far behind now, there are going to be a few people who just ditch the corn right away and go to beans, more than likely.
Can I talk to you a little bit about the milo and pricing, because it's been so strong? Have you priced it out already?
Yeah, I sold the milo at $4.50. The basis was 45 over, and I thought that was wonderful, and it's now 85 over.
Well, you know, but, you win some, milo, and you will win some, yeah. Not as much.
So. Milo on paper is the most profitable crop we got, whether it's irrigated beans, dryland beans, or irrigated corn.
When you look out across the globe at this time, and in past years, when we've talked to you several of the past times, and we usually try to talk in the fall and the spring both, you've been pretty bearish the marketplace. I know milo is an outlier in this. Have you changed very much in the last 6 months?
No. I think the most worrisome thing in the last 6 months is it looks like South America is going to come in with a record bean and corn crop. So I think the world situation has sort of gotten worse. I'm not very optimistic on prices of anything, and we saw rather poor feeding report on corn yesterday. On acreage, I think the USDA is will find another 3 to 4 million acres. The numbers yesterday weren't enough, considering last year's acreage, et cetera. So I'm not friendly to price. I'm afraid the bean prices could go a lot lower.
By how much?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me to see $8 on November beans.
Yeah, mid-8s or lower than that?
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on if we go through and plant, say, 87, 88 million acres, it could get really bad. I suspect that we're going to find a good many bean acres in the June planting report.
Yeah, so your thought is that the June numbers will show acreage that will show up, I would guess. You're considering a lot of acres showing up in your part of the world and other parts of the world, too?
Just all over, you know. If you look at the total acreage mix yesterday, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you are presupposing that you're going to have a bad spring and can't have a lot of prevent plant, which I don't see happening.
Right, so you've got that, and then you compound it with the grain stocks for corn, which was about 140 to 150 million bushels heavy. And I take it you're not convinced of the argument that we're using at a reasonable rate and we will still make the 5.3 billion bushels of usage for feed.
No, I've been against the feed reports for the last several quarters, and I think this one sort of catches up that they've overestimated feed usage.
And where will that not be used? Is it?
Well, I think it didn't make any sense last year, Todd, that you had something like a 16% increase in feed consumption with a 1% decrease in animal numbers. It never made sense, and it still doesn't make sense. But this year's the feeding numbers ought to be better because the animal weights are up and the animal numbers are up somewhat, you know, hogs in particular and broilers. But I think that just last year's number was far too high, and we're sort of adjusting to it.
Oh, so you're not unconvinced that usage this year is that good, or you're just thinking that there's an adjustment that has to be made still in the whole of the numbers.
Yeah, I think last year's numbers were, I just think they were too low, and we're going to have to adjust for them. There's more and more on-farm storage being built, so it's harder and harder to get a grasp on what the stocks really are.
What do you think about it? Well, go on.
Go ahead, that's all.
So what do you think about exports?
Well, I'm terribly impressed with the bean numbers. I find them amazing. They are really, really good. And each week we think they're going to fall off. They don't. And I just wonder how this keeps on going. So from that point of view, my bearishness is not as much because they really are pretty fantastic.
They've been really good.
Yeah. Now, meal is sort of interesting because the meal shipments are under a year ago still. And the USDA says they're going to be 1.25 million over a year ago, and that looks suspicious because we're not shipping enough meal to make the estimates.
Did you see that China? It appears China officially may be raising their import numbers for soybeans.
No, I didn't see it
appears they may for the fiscal year, so it might be interesting to see how that plays out. On the other hand, it seems that it could be a bit disturbing. I think when I was going through the numbers, I saw someplace, because China is taking about 65% of the exports from the United States for soybeans, that we have, as a nation, given up about 40 countries in terms of the export market. And there's an awful lot of soybean eggs, so to speak, in one basket. Are you concerned about China at all?
Oh, yeah. I think China's clearly slowing. And I think the world population story is still intact, and that story is that the population is declining in a lot of the big countries, Western world countries, China, India, I mean, not even China, Japan, all of Europe. And to some extent, the U.S. is only growing by the rate of immigration. So, yes, I'm worried about the fact. As the population slows, they get old. The population itself gets older and eats less. So I'm skeptical of the story about the emerging Chinese middle class will eat more meats as they go from lower income class to middle class. And on the other hand, we've got an aging population that eats less, and the population in total is not growing.
So I was not, I listened to you make this conversation as this argument last fall, and I wasn't quite convinced that it was of where you were coming from, but this adds a kind of a different twist to it, because now your suggestion there is that while we will have, emerging countries coming on, those in the Western world already have leveled off, maybe even begun to drop. Certainly Europe has. And that population is aging, and we all know what happens. And so your thought process really is the combination of all these things isn't nearly as bright as maybe others are considering.
Absolutely. I've held that thought process for several years now, and I feel stronger about it now because we're seeing so many countries with negative birth rates. And, you know, it's pretty telling.
What else has been on your mind as you've been watching the global marketplace and commodities, whether it be crude oil or one of the other commodities?
I don't know. I think it's a highly dangerous mix because we got world central banks have been printing money like mad to not very much effect. And we have bubbles all over the place. Bond market comes to mind, obviously. So I don't know. It's a highly volatile time. For me as a speculator, it's sort of an exciting time because I think we're going to have some wild, interesting things happen. But it's frightening. I don't think the central banks have a whole actually know what they're up to.
Yes.
The whole thing could blow up any moment.
So here in the United States, we appear to have made it through the process, but you're still concerned that there's an awful lot of extra money printed in the marketplace, not only here but around the planet.
Yes. And I'm concerned about how it all is going to play out. We've started a currency war, obviously. Japan started it, and then Europe's picked up on it, and the U.S. is being hurt by the currency war. But eventually the currency wars turn into interest rate wars. So the currency gets so low that they have to raise interest rates big time to protect the currency, and you know what that means? That means bad business. So it's a vicious cycle, and I'm not sure anybody knows how to get out of the cycle.
Have you been watching land rates and values?
Have I what?
Been watching the value of real estate and farmland in particular?
Yeah, well, I think farmland is coming off a bit in price. Farmers in my area are stressed pretty badly, I think. A number of farmers around me have gone out of business, and and it's just kind of messy. Land rents, cash rents are coming down, and real estate values are going up, but rather slowly.
Is it
home
big
prices?
Yeah, the guys that are going under, are those the bigger cash renters, or are they farmers that own quite a bit of land as well?
A little of both. You know, got landowners have been written to cash renters, and the cash renters can't make it, and the landowner doesn't know how to eat and farm it either. And it's not anything big happening, but it is happening. I would imagine it's probably happening in your neck of the woods also.
There are some that are happening, and we hear about them occasionally. I know we've heard about some out of Indiana at this point. But farmers still seem to be pretty flush with cash, though they're very worried in the area. I think across all of the United States, certainly in the Corn Belt, about the price of both commodities, corn, soybeans, and of wheat, and what effect that might have over the long run. I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum to come off of 4 or 5 really good years in a row, John. And to have to try to... The biggest problem I think they face is that they have to try to control expenses across the board, because it's a business and a home both. And when once you get used to spending a lot more money, it's really difficult to stop spending so much money.
Yes. Well, we as farmers have got to get our input costs down. I mean, we just have to. We're having a one nice thing is the price of crude oil's come down, and I think that's probably, in my case, knocking $10 to $15 an acre off on production costs. But we need to get seed costs down, and we need to get a lot of things down in order. I'm afraid we're in a new pricing era, and you know, sub $4 corn doesn't really make you a whole lot of money. Certain sub $10 beans is not fun at all. So as businessmen, we got to figure out how to get our overhead down, get our costs down, and that's hard to do because you're dependent on Monsanto and those and the fertilizer people.
I know we talked about sorghum and that you had priced that out. That didn't surprise me. It went against you just a little bit. But as I said up front, when it's a win, it's not such a bad deal if it's not as big a win as you had hoped. Are you pricing up front corn and soybeans that you're planting this year too?
Oh, I've hedged the beans. Oh, I guess around $11.50 to $12, and corn around $4.70. I virtually got 85% of what I'm planting this year hedged. I'm about 40% hedged on stuff I'm trying to plant. I will plant in 16. I've been selling September 16 corn at around $4.28, hoping it'll get up close to $4.50, and I'm going to hit that pretty hard if I can. And I've had some beans around the $10 mark for 16, but I'm well hedged, which is, I'm unusual as a farmer.
I suppose so. There'll be a lot of guys thinking, wow, how'd he pull that one off?
Farmers are scared to death to hedge, and if you don't hedge, you're hedging it. If you don't hedge, you're just gambling. I mean, I've talked to farmers and say, oh, I'm only 25% hedged, and they're afraid that if the market goes up, that they'll lose the advantage on the 25% they hedge rather than the 75% they haven't hedged, et cetera. And farmers are just skittish about the futures market, but this is a business and we've got to, got to survive. I can remember in the 2005 time when beans were $4 to $5. Boy, that was tough, tough, tough. And I hope we don't have to go into that again.
Hey, can I ask you a different question? And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but there are some regional differences. I would suggest that most farmers across the Corn Belt, from Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, and many other places, when they were making their farm program decisions, chose our county for both soybeans and for corn. However, PLC, as I understand it, was designed more for the southern farmer, and I'm wondering what programs you chose.
PLC, but I don't think it's you get upfront benefit from the past prices, which is nice, but then if prices stay down, it comes back and bites you at the other end. So I'm not so sure it's a great deal one way or the other. I'm sort of opinionless on the whole deal.
And would you? Okay, go on.
Go ahead. No, that's it.
Well, are other producers in your area, were they PLC?
I don't really know. I haven't talked to many of them about it. I presume they will, because that seems to be the best option. But boy, it's a confusing program, and a lot of people still don't understand it.
Well, it can be a confusing program, and there is some division, I know, in who uses what parts of the program, but it was pretty clearly three farm programs designed for three different parts of the country. I'm not surprised. It truly was. Arc County for corn growers and PLC for the Delta and the Southeast. And I think maybe even the guys in Texas, if I remember right. And then Arc Individual, actually for just one state, Montana.
Yeah.
So it kind of been interesting. I thought probably given your bearish tone that you certainly would have gone with PLC, but I wanted to double check. And your mix of crops isn't all that different. I don't know how sorghum plays into that PLC decision.
Well, I don't either, really, because we have so little history of planting sorghum down here. I mean, it's not a big crop, and all of a sudden in the last 2 years it's sort of exploding because of China buying all the sorghum so they can beat tariffs and corn. So, I mean, this is unprecedented. I've never, ever thought of the Milo basis being 85 over corn. These December corn futures, our hedge month in corn is September corn, which is under December corn. So it's quite a boon. It makes, I've switched some irrigated bean acreage to Milo. Make more money.
Wow. Well, you saw the numbers that came out from USDA and what the planting intentions were. Even the top two producing states increased, and I think they produced 75%, Kansas and Texas, 75% of the sorghum. Texas was up 20%. Kansas was only up less than 2%. But those, you think about a 20% increase in one of the top two states, that's a big dog increase in the whole number. It was up a lot. It was up a lot. And I guess
I think it's going up more. In our area, I think it's going to go up a lot more.
USDA is convinced it'll stick around for a while. Are you?
The Milo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've underestimated the Milo acreage. I think it's going up a good bit more than that. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 9 million when it's over.
Oh, wow. Well, it'll be interesting to see how all of that plays out. John, thank you so much.
Okay, great talking to you.
For taking time with us today. I love talking with you. I know the guys like to hear what you have to say. We'll get back to you again, maybe a little sooner this time than the fall. How about that?
Okay, have a good day.
Hey, you too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures joined us here on this April 2nd edition of Commodity Week. You can hear the whole of the program again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, and you can find the USDA report figures each and every time they're released. It's all at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.